It's Industry Chatter, as it is every Thursday in the 3 p.m. hour, and my guest today is Randall Jackson. He's Vice President of Federal Solutions at MarkLogic, and it is great to see you today, Randall. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start where we always do. Tell us what MarkLogic does and who you do it for.
Well, MarkLogic, we help our customers solve big data challenges. In a nutshell, that's what we do. That's where most of our business comes from. We have a lot of business in the government, as well as the media industry and in financial services. And when I talk about big data, I'm not simply talking about, terabytes or petabytes of data. I'm actually very simply talking about more information that an organization can manage. Mm-hmm. And that's where we help. Mm-hmm. So you might consider more information you can handle might be the complexity of the information. It might be the diversity of the information. It might be the rate at which you receive it. It might be the scale of the information. But in any case, it's more than you can handle. And our flagship product is a database for unstructured information. And when I refer to unstructured, I'm really talking about information that just doesn't fit neatly into rows and columns. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you think about information today and not just emails and, let's say, you know, office documents, Word or PDF or whatever, but mm-hmm. also Twitter and Facebook and all these varying amounts of data, you know, that's really what MarkLogic is optimized to actually use and process. And you know, in contrast, most systems today are built, I would say, with what most people refer to as relational databases. They're built with relational databases. MarkLogic is not that. When you think about relational databases, that technology approach was developed in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 70s, I would consider that kind of the wild, wild west of information. It made a lot of sense to have to take all this information and put it in one common structure.
Mm-hmm.
And then knowing what you're going to search on before you search for it, that all made sense.
Mm-hmm.
In a post 9/11 world, that just doesn't make sense anymore. The web and Homeland Security, cybersecurity, you know, and all of the social media aspects that we deal with every day just make it impossible to take all that information, put it in a common structure, knowing what you're going to search on before you get it. With the web, you never know what you're going to get until you get it. So it just doesn't make sense. And this is where MarkLogic really can help.
How has the nature of data changed, say, in the last 5 years, and how do you see it continuing to change and evolve in maybe the next couple or five?
Right. Well, first, just absolutely the volume. I mean, the volume at which we get it has gotten tremendous. And when you think about all that goes on today, just simply to keep our country safe or support citizens in the civilian ranks of the government or to even prosecute wars as we are right now, that information is just coming in such volume and so fast and furious that I just don't I don't think you can look to traditional technology to handle that. As we go forward, I think you're going to see a lot more of it. You're just going to see a lot more information. You know, it's funny. At one time, you know, a terabyte was considered a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
And today, we frequently talk to customers that are talking in the petabytes, and a few are starting to talk in the exabytes. Now, think about that.
No, okay. Before you get you, that's okay. Starting to scale up on me there a little bit. Exabytes is not even a term that I didn't even know what the next level was going to be.
Absolutely. That's after petabytes. So when you start getting into tens of thousands of terabytes, you're talking exabytes. And some organizations are literally looking at the possibility of supporting exabyte environments. And when you look at traditional technology today, it's just not designed to support that. And by the way, I'm not saying that MarkLogic has supported an exabyte repository either, but I do believe we're well suited to move in that direction.
Well, and I think it's instructive to understand that it's not probably going to be very long until people want to be there.
Exactly.
And, or need to be there.
Yes.
Based on what you're talking about and other people are talking about this avalanche of data that continues to be generated. I mean, there are all kinds of ridiculous benchmarks that you see people put put out online, but something like online every day. An amount of data is created that's equal to all the books published between the beginning of the press, the Gutenberg press, and like the year 2000 or so. That was the latest one that I read not too long ago.
Yeah, I believe it.
To speak to that volume issue that you're talking about.
Absolutely. And I would say no organization produces more information, as an organization than the U.S. government. Certainly, you don't see any as much new information as produced with the U.S. government. And therefore, I think no organization has a more critical need to actually analyze that information.
The components of big data, you mentioned complexity, diversity, speed, and scale. Talk about complexity a little bit and what you mean by that.
It can be really any number of things. You know, with MarkLogic, we work a lot with all aspects of the government, and that certainly with national security organizations, with Department of Defense organizations, with civilian organizations. So you might consider, on the one hand, healthcare in one sense, national security information and information that you may get from the field in another sense. You might consider asset management. There's organizations that want to really try to control their asset management. There's also the idea of, let's say, card catalogs, but electronic card catalogs, sometimes referred to as metadata catalogs.
Mm-hmm.
So the type of information you're going to get is not simply things that today we can define as this is an email, that's a Word document. Those are all great.
Mm-hmm.
We get a lot of that, but there's any number of formats that we may see that makes a single application and a single repository really complex and difficult to deal with. And I take that back to my original comment, which is when you look at traditional technology and the fact that you have to build a common structure for it, the complexity of that information just makes that not possible.
Mm-hmm. My guest today is Randall Jackson. He's the Vice President of Federal Solutions at MarkLogic. I want to talk about those other components of big data when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
Over the skies, it says the enemy can't see you. To the Marines who carry out their mission on the ground, it says I have your back. To adversaries, it says don't even think about it. It is the F-35B, the fifth generation multi-role fighter jet that combines short takeoff and vertical landing capability with supersonic speed and radar evading stealth. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go. Wherever the mission takes them, our Marines know it will be there. It's the F-35B, a fighter jet that can take off and land virtually anywhere, from the most remote, austere airfields and roads to modern ships. That means it can be based close to frontline combat, shrinking the distance between base and target. For the Marines and for our nation, that's a game-changing advantage. The F-35B, the multi-role fighter that's equipped to go wherever Marines must go.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is heart health, featuring Dr. John Golden, a cardiologist with Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Over your lifetime, your heart will beat more than 2.5 billion times. You can help make its job easier by doing the following. Follow a heart-healthy diet. Cut down on salt, cholesterol, and saturated fats, and eat more fruit, vegetables, and grains. Limit your alcohol intake. Be physically active. Take stairs, not elevators, and park further from work to introduce more walking into your daily routine. Quit smoking. It isn't too late. Quitting reduces your heart disease risk within 1 year. Achieve and maintain a healthy weight. Know your family history. Your genes affect your cardiac risk and help determine what measures need to be taken to protect you from heart disease. We at Kaiser Permanente encourage you to see your doctor regularly to discuss your health. Work together to reduce your risk of heart disease. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's Experts in Health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
For over 80 years, Motorola has been committed to keeping Americans safe. Today, Motorola's interoperable communication systems are built to open standards so federal, state, and local agencies can work together in emergency situations and be their best in the moments that matter. That's why first responders and others dedicated to keeping citizens safe choose Motorola. Because they know Motorola always puts public safety first. just like they do. To learn more, visit MotorolaSolutions.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday morning's Federal Drive. The chief of the Army Reserve speaks out about new legislation that would change how the reserves are activated during times of emergency. And the VA has awarded hundreds of millions of dollars in technology contracts to improve veterans' access to benefits. It's called the Veterans Relationship Management System. How can you benefit? That and more Friday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Randall Jackson of Mark Logic is my guest on Industry Chatter today. Something I looked up during the break, okay, this blows my mind. It's from Wikipedia. An exabyte is a unit of information or computer storage equal to one quintillion bytes. A quintillion, I mean, this is the level that we're talking about. You and I were laughing during the break that I remember. Now, this was, to be fair, 15 years ago or so, maybe, or maybe longer. But I remember buying an IBM PC with 170 megabyte hard drive and thinking, well, first of all, it was $1,700.
Right.
And I was thinking, man, I'm in shape now. I've nailed it. And I had none of us, I guess, had any idea what was on the horizon. Are we still at a place like that when it comes to data and the volumes and the speed and so on? We'll talk more about the concepts of big data that you outlined before. But are we still really on that, on the very edge of that horizon? Like, looking back now, it seems like I was with my 170 meg hard drive.
I think we are. I was also saying at the break that I have about 70 gig on my laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And I also remember when that was just an unbelievable amount of data. And now, you know, thumb drives are $20.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think that we are. And I think, honestly, not very long from now, when I say that, I'm saying a matter of years and not 10 years, but single-digit years, we'll look back and see petabytes as being the norm and exabytes being really right around the corner. So I think we're there. I really do.
It's really amazing because I'm starting, as we look at technology, to get a grasp on what my parents and grandparents experienced with technology. My grandmother, who's no longer with us, was born in 1910 and remembered when there were no cars in the area in which she grew up.
Right.
And so seeing all of this is I'm trying to take some context from that when I try to have an open mind about the possibilities that exist out there.
Absolutely.
We talked about the complexity of what you referred to as big data earlier. Talk about diversity, the second component.
And that's really self-explanatory. It's just the number of different types of information that you can get. And now it's so much of it. You know, it's funny, when I do searches on the web, and I know, just like everyone else, I'm very impatient if I don't find something very quickly, like in the first few seconds.
Yeah.
But I never know what I'm going to get until I get it. I don't know if it's going to be a video, if it's going to be an image, if it's going to be a document.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just diversity are just all the varying types of information that you can get.
When you talk to agencies about that and understanding that,
mm-hmm.
Is there a culture change that's involved with thinking about the way that we have to potentially consume any number of different things?
I would say yes, and it's interesting you use the word culture, because I actually have had a couple of conversations with a few of our customers and prospects, even recently. As a matter of fact, yesterday I was at the Pentagon, and I was speaking to an admiral there, and the word culture came up.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is a cultural shift, in some sense, that needs to be made by a lot of the government, quite honestly, to move or to look at new and innovative technology and not fall back on what they consider to be safe, which is, like I said, a lot of these traditional technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of that shift is safety. I fully understand the safety. I mean, in their shoes, they cannot have something go horribly wrong, mm-hmm. especially large agencies.
Yep.
At the same time, given the current environment we're in, and especially the budget environment we're in, where everything is constrained or in some sense being reduced, it's forcing a new look at fixing some of these old problems. And what was safe in some of these traditional technologies is actually the more expensive route and therefore more risky.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe technologies, many of them out there, but certainly technologies like MarkLogic, I think not only do we solve big data problems, but we solve them in a cost-effective way. And I think that combination is a shift that the government has to make, to just look at innovative technologies as not a high risk, but actually a lower risk mm-hmm. option than sticking with what they've been doing.
Let's explore that balance a little bit later on in the okay. hour, because I certainly see that. And whenever somebody goes the counterintuitive route, I love to explore it. I love counterintuitiveness. So I want to get into that a little bit more. Let's talk, though, about speed. When mm-hmm. we're thinking about the quantities of data that we first talked about at the beginning of this segment and earlier at the beginning of the show, speed becomes the imperative. People, you're not the only impatient person yes. when it comes to trying to sift through a ton of information.
That's right.
Everybody wants it yesterday or 5 seconds ago. Talk about the importance of speed in big data, because I would imagine there's a couple of different components there.
There are a couple of different components. So the first component is I guess, the most obvious one, which is, you know, you want to, when you have an application that you are accessing, you want that information to come back to you quickly. Now, that's fine if, in your case, you're looking across 170 meg and it comes back in a second. That's great. But if you're looking across a petabyte, what about that coming across in a second? Because if you use kind of the same math, it might take many minutes for mm-hmm. it to come back. So the ability to be able to return the information that you're looking for in context and in real time, basically in a second or sub-second, is a huge part of solving the big data challenge, which we at MarkLogic think we do well. But I would also say the other aspect of speed is what I'm going to refer to as speed to mission. In other words, how quickly can you stand up whatever application it is that you need in order to complete your mission?
Mm-hmm.
And again, when you look at traditional technology, having to know, as I said, all of this information up front, what you're going to search on, having to know up front what structure you want it in and putting it all in that structure, you can't even begin to build the application and therefore can't even begin to access the application until all that is done. So number one thing about, you know, 21st century products is we remove the need to do all that, to know all that ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Taking information as is and putting it in an application and being able to access that application immediately is really what 21st century products are about.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the change, if there is a change, in the hardware versus software dynamic, because mm-hmm. it used to be that the software processed, the processing power involved in the software was pretty much static,
right.
and you could do better or worse in processing that information based on the hardware you had. Is that still the case, or is that dynamic changing or evolving?
I think it's changing somewhat, but certainly it's still the case. I mean, hardware is getting faster and faster, and now, you know, there are more and more cores. And so when you think of a system, so a server, literally a physical server with multiple, I'm going to say, sockets or processors in it, and each one of them having multiple cores on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can fit a lot more processing power in the same chassis, so to speak. And so certainly systems have gotten faster. Mm-hmm. They've gotten a lot faster, and therefore the same software will run faster. But also the other thing about, you know, 21st century products is they're optimized to run in this new environment. So they're optimized to run in this multiprocessor, multi-core environment. So the software itself is actually faster because it can do a lot more in parallel.
I'm smiling as I'm looking at you, and I apologize because I'm not smiling because of what you're saying. I'm thinking of a buddy of mine who not long ago bought a brand new computer with the latest hardware inside of it. And because he was familiar with it, had the shop put Windows 98 on it. and couldn't understand why. It seemed to be just about as fast as the computer that he just got rid of.
Right.
It just didn't occur to him. And so that's why I'm laughing about what you're talking about. Randall Jackson is the Vice President of Federal Solutions at MarkLogic. My guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You count on our technology every day. The office elevator that takes you up and down efficiently. The jet engine that gets you home safely. The fire suppression system you hope you never need, but know is there. You count on things we make to protect you from harm, and even to keep you cool and comfortable. Our technologies are a critical part of your everyday life. Yet many people don't even know who we are. Our name is United Technologies. We are Carrier, Hamilton Sunstrand, Otis, Pratt & Whitney, Sikorsky, and UTC Fire and Security. Six businesses united as one powerful company. In fact, we are one of the largest manufacturers in the United States, which likely makes us the biggest company you've never heard of, even though you depend on us every single day. United Technologies. Get to know more about us at UTC.com.
Even my wife really doesn't understand what I do. She calls it cyber chess. Actually, that's close. As a cyber specialist, I help clients understand the critical moves they need to make before an attack occurs. It's more than just data security. It's the full cyber life cycle.
In a certain context, I'm like my brother. He's preventing crime patrolling the streets. I spend my day online ensuring our clients' data and information systems are secure. It's what I do. I'm good at it.
For a cyber career that's something truly extraordinary, look no further than the strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton. As a global leader in cybersecurity, Booz Allen offers competitive salaries and benefits, ongoing training, and the opportunity to work with recognized cyber thought leaders at a company committed to helping you get the most out of work and life. That's why Fortune named them one of America's 100 best companies to work for again.
That's why I chose Booz Allen.
That's why I chose Booz Allen. For a cyber career that's something truly extraordinary, visit BoozAllen.com/FED. Booz Allen is an equal opportunity employer.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, nutrition, dietary supplements, herbal remedies, and more. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
Profile America, Thursday, July 21st. On the one hand, there's increasing concern about obesity, diabetes, and the quality of the diet of many Americans, underlined by pronouncements of anxiety from doctors and public health officials. On the other, junk food shows no sign of waning in popularity. In fact, today is National Junk Food Day. Its theme song might be the hit of years ago, Junk Food Junkie, which sang the praises of such items as Dr. Pepper and an Old Moon Pie. However, Americans are increasing the amount of fruits and vegetables they consume, rising from just over 600 pounds each in 1980 to 643 pounds today. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Young, gov, and awesome? Join 500 federal emerging leaders at the only conference created by and for younger feds. The Next Generation of Government Summit, presented by Young Government Leaders and GovLoop, takes place July 28th and 29th at the JW Marriott. Federal News Radio listeners, save on registration. Use the discount code FEDRADIO to save $55. Visit nextgengovt.com. We'll be right back.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My industry chatter guest today is Randall Jackson, the Vice President of Federal Solutions at MarkLogic. And back to your list of some of the components of big data. We talked about complexity and diversity and a little bit about speed. I want to talk about scale. Is scale only what we discussed earlier when it comes to the size, the amount, volume, quantity? Is that what you're talking about scale?
So in scale, for the most part, yes, I'm referring to the volume. I look at it really from the standpoint that the volume has never been bigger. And we'll say the same thing tomorrow and next month and next year. The volume has never been bigger. And one of the things today, I believe, is that we don't want to throw anything away either. So in other words, all information is important. Mm-hmm. If, for instance, if you're a person who is concerned about national security and you want to see the impact of new information and how that may have affected a decision that you would have made, let's say, 6 months ago had you had that information, sometimes you need to compare it to really older information. Or let's say you want to try to predict something, right? So you'll want to look at old information, find a pattern, and then if you see that pattern again today, that may tell you something. So, you know, not only getting all this new information, but the need to hold on to old information and throw away nothing, I think is a big part of the scale issues that you have in big data solutions.
When you mention it in that way and you use the term, we don't want to throw anything away, my wife and I love those hoarder shows on TV. And so the idea of throwing things away is something that I love. The idea, it's very cathartic, and yet you're exactly right. To if we're going to use data as a predictive tool, you have to be able to access all of it at any given time, and then we're back to what we've talked about speed,
exactly,
and being able to go through stuff that may be old or may be in a different format or whatever in a very short period of time.
I would agree, and I'd also say that a part of the reason that in some cases this can't be done is simply the cost of holding it all. And so I think one of the big issues is, as I've talked about, traditional technology versus 21st century technology, is the need to be able to do the same amount of work on less hardware, or more work on less hardware. And there have even been a customer of ours, a very large customer of ours, that when we got involved, they only required 5% of the hardware to meet the same, to meet the same performance with, basically 20 times that. So
you made their data center consolidation effort look pretty good, pretty easy. Pretty quick.
A lot better. Exactly.
Yeah. What effect is that effort, the initiative that the administration is working on data center closure and consolidation, having on companies like yours that are working on those very issues with the agencies?
Well, certainly, we want to get more involved. Again, you know, even in the data center consolidation, there is sometimes a desire to fall back on what they know. So it's basically running the same software just on fewer servers or in fewer places, which doesn't really solve the problem. Really, the whole idea of the data center consolidation is to actually reduce the footprint that's required and reduce a lot of the duplication, because there's a lot of the same data in a lot of different places. And putting it all in one place or in fewer places, I should say, and also the ability to get rid of duplication, I think, is a big part of the data center consolidation. And it's an area I think we can definitely help.
Let me ask you one more question about scale before we get away from that. We talked about scale as from the perspective of a volume issue or a quantity of data issue. Is there also a scale issue where the application itself has to scale when all of a sudden you reach a point where you're bringing in maybe five times as much information as you did yesterday? Those kinds of shifts can happen
absolutely
in today's environment really quickly.
Yes. So hopefully the software is built such that it can scale linearly with the need. In other words, sometimes you add twice as much information and let's say you need five times the processing power in order to support it.
Well, maybe you need the information back just as fast
exactly
as you do, although you're going through twice produce as much of it.
Absolutely. And as you scale, you want the ability to scale linearly mm-hmm. and not scale geometrically because then it's just not, again, it's not cost effective. Again, an area that we believe we can help in.
My guest is Randall Jackson. He is the Vice President of Federal Solutions at MarkLogic. We talked earlier in the program about finding a balance between safety, and you just mentioned it mm-hmm. again, where there's a tendency sometimes to just, well, we'll just do what we've always done because it might not be the greatest success in the world, but we also know it's not going to crash and burn versus finding innovation and so on. Let's talk more about that balance when we come back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose.
NBC News Radio, I'm Kelly O'Donnell on Capitol Hill. A lot of talk, but no deal. White House spokesman Jay Carney says the president is still talking with congressional leaders and other lawmakers, but so far there's no agreement on a plan to raise the debt limit before the August 2nd deadline.
There is no progress to report, but we continue to work on getting the most significant deficit reduction package possible.
Meanwhile, Republican Speaker of the House John Boehner continues to say taxes, including closing loopholes, are completely off the table.
I've never voted to raise taxes, and I don't intend to.
More Americans were out of work last week. 10,000 people signed up for first-time unemployment benefits. Applications have topped 400,000 for 15 weeks. More than half the country is in the pressure cooker. High temperatures and humidity range from Kansas all the way to Maine. 140 million Americans are sweating it out. It's blamed for at least 20 deaths. I'm Kelly O'Donnell, NBC News Radio.
If you drive a pre-owned GM vehicle and you've never pushed the blue OnStar button on your rearview mirror, now is the time to do it. Because right now, if you're not a current OnStar subscriber, you can try 3 months of OnStar free with no obligation. Push the blue button and tell the advisor you want automatic crash response, help in an emergency, navigation, and more. Offer available on 2006 and newer digitally equipped GM models. Push the button now or visit OnStar.com for coverage map, details, and system limitations. OnStar. Live on.
If you're like me, you have personal belongings that you hold dear. Belongings you can't live without. It's precisely why GEICO makes it easy to get renter's insurance for a really low rate. Renters can protect all their personal belongings for as little as $12 a month. What belongings do I hold dear? This karaoke machine and my vinyl record collection. You fancy a tune? Nah, I shouldn't. All right then.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair?
Visit GEICO.com to see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
An interagency working group is trying to ensure the security of commercial software. The Departments of Defense and Homeland Security lead a task force to identify short-term risk mitigation strategies. The committee also wants to make sure the country maintains manufacturing capabilities over the long term. Greg Schaefer is the Acting Deputy Undersecretary for the National Protection and Programs Directorate at DHS. He says there have been instances of malicious code found in software and hardware used by the government.
If you're in federal IT, CDWG has the people and products to seamlessly integrate all your communications into a single, unified, accessible communications network. So if your employees are scattered hither and yon, visit CDWG.com/unified. We'll make it seem like they're all hither, not yon. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit CDWG.com to learn how Avaya phones can help improve productivity with features like conferencing and corporate directories.
How can you reduce your agency's IT budget and support the mission even more effectively? Here's a simple strategy. Cut one of your biggest IT expenditures in half. NetApp storage is flexible and easy to manage. It also requires far less hardware, at least 50% less for virtualized environments. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency built on NetApp and delivered by NetApp partners like FCN Technology Solutions. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal. Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris.
The Obama administration is cutting back the thicket of federal regulations. The point man is Cass Sunstein, the administrator of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs.
We've seen from the executive agencies, the career people have tremendous knowledge and expertise just by virtue of their experience. So they tend to know often. We did a rule in 1975, but it doesn't make so much sense in 2011.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal. Drive.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Randall Jackson is the Vice President of Federal Solutions at MarkLogic, and he is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We've talked about innovation, and we've talked about some cultural issues throughout the hour, and I want to kind of combine those. You mentioned earlier in the program that agencies, and I'm not just picking on federal agencies, it's the same in the private sector too.
Absolutely.
And I imagine you've seen it in some of the work that your company's done with private sector companies too. But there is an element of desire for safety, I think, is what it really boils down to.
Yes.
We're going to do what we've always done because we know it may not be the absolute best option, but we know it won't blow up in our faces either.
Right.
And so I'm curious about trying to balance the desire for safety and the desire for achieving the desired outcome of a project, whether it's the absolute fastest or absolute best or absolute cheapest, compared to a spirit of innovation. And you mentioned earlier something that I caught my ear, as I said, because it's counterintuitive, and that's the idea that doing what you've always done and playing it safe may actually be the riskiest option.
That's right.
Explain that.
So I'll look at it from a couple of different angles. The first thing is I believe a lot of organizations that are now looking at new and innovative technology is doing it largely because of the budget crisis that we're in. I mean, they simply can't afford to stay the course. And since the government can't continue to do business in the way that it always has, I think the days of a lot of these multi-year, very costly, enormous contracts are numbered. It doesn't mean they won't happen. I just think fewer of them will happen. The government really needs results. Now, in some sense, when we talk about innovation, part of what, and this is where, you know, when you talk about how do you mix risk and innovation? Well, part of the innovation that the government wants to go through is limited by simply the desire to keep the existing system whole. So what the government ends up doing is spending, let's say, 50, maybe even 80% of their dollars actually maintaining existing systems and basically building the plumbing and the infrastructure for these traditional technologies, and maybe 20% of their time innovating.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they don't quite get the system they're looking for. What I believe, you know, newer and more innovative products actually help with is to spend, let's say, 20% of that time building the plumbing because they're optimized for the problem you're trying to solve. And now you spend 80% of your time and money actually innovating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, no one wants to hear about reduced budgets, but in some cases that's going to happen. But even if it's the same budget, if you could just repurpose your money to innovation and away from this plumbing, I think just that alone will see huge, huge gains. So,
how receptive is that argument? Is that enough to overcome the cultural barriers that we've talked about?
So I would say no, and I'll tell you just my experience is that at MarkLogic, we have to be better and not just twice as good, five times as good. We have to be 50 or 100, and in some cases, 1,000 times faster, more scalable, and so on. And then we're also a more cost-effective solution. Mm-hmm. And that's the only way to break through cultural barriers, because after a while, it's just undeniable that we need to look at this technology.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, you know, we have a number of qualifications, in other words, references that we can turn to and say, you know, here is where we've done this before, a customer who's done what you want, they've done it, they've gone through the same process, you can talk to them. And at the same time, we take their own data and show them that we are immediately, and I mean sometimes in days, certainly weeks and months, we're faster, you can build applications quicker, you don't need as much manpower in order to maintain it. That doesn't mean you want to get rid of people. It just may mean you may use those people now, like I said, to do innovation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not always enough just to be better. You have to be a lot better to overcome culture. The other area that helps overcome culture is actually talking about it openly. And it's something that I've been doing more, I think, lately, like in the last year, than I ever have. Because being at a company like MarkLogic and an innovative technology, and then walking into organizations and having them say, wow, yep, you're clearly better, but I just don't know if I can do this. We have to talk openly about the fact that I can overcome any technical and in some case any business objections. I just can't overcome the cultural shift that has to happen in their head to get them to seriously look at a MarkLogic.
That I think that's really insightful, because there are a lot of companies out there of all different sizes that have innovative technologies, and they are running into the same kind of thing that you are. And what is interesting is the folks that you're talking to at the levels at which you're talking to them, my experience has been that they're very receptive to driving cultural change. It's above and below. And it's the idea that I think this is great, but I'm never going to be able to get my team to buy into this. Is that the same thing that you're saying?
Absolutely. We've definitely heard it. Now the truth is, over the last, since really 2007, we've grown by 10x in our government business. We've done quite well in the government business. But a part of the reason that I believe we've had success is because we realize this and we take it head on, with knowing we have to be, you know, 50 times better, 100 better, 100 times better, and then knowing that we have to talk very openly about what's keeping, you know, an organization from moving. The interesting thing is, for those organizations that do make the switch, they go, wow, why has this taken me so long? And we're broadly adopted in those organizations.
So. Well, if I'm the person that's at the agency that's having trouble getting adjusted to this, and I'm sitting here going, you're right, this is undeniable, but I've got to not only make this happen myself, I've got to lead a group of people who not necessarily open to this. What do I do to get them to bring them along?
Give us something small enough that we can consume, that we can show you.
Okay.
And show you not in a year from now, but show you in sometimes days, certainly weeks from now. Just let us show you in your environment with your data what we can do. And that goes a long way to going and saying, listen, let's look at these two things side by side. This is clearly better. And these guys did something in 3 weeks that it's been taking us 2 years to do. And that starts to really break down, I think, a lot of barriers in those situations.
Randall Jackson is the Vice President of Federal Solutions at MarkLogic, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Back to wrap up in just a moment. We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Randall Jackson of MarkLogic, my guest on Industry Chatter this hour. And it's been great to have you here. I appreciate you coming in.
Yes, this has been fun.
Talk about all of this. If we step back and try to think about all of the issues that we've talked about data and the avalanche, and you said, and I believe accurately, today we have more than we've ever had, and we'll say the same thing tomorrow and 6 months from now and 2 years from now. As we pull back and try to get a handle on this, this is kind of like a surfer riding an 8-foot wave or something like that, where the wave could just wipe you out at any moment.
That's right.
How do you harness that from the broader scale? You've talked about the technology that your company has, and you've talked about some of the day-to-day nuts and bolts kinds of things. But mentally, on a maybe a 30,000-foot level, how do you wrap your mind around, do you think, all of these ideas that are such dramatic changes to the way agencies and people do their business?
I'd certainly say that's difficult. You know, our organization, our government organization, at one time we were a lot smaller. We were just a handful of folks, and we were going out and kind of tactically just trying to get the word out on all the things we could do. And at the time, for me, it was really, you know, just how much can I, you know, software can I sell and so on. As I've been here longer and I realize the impact that we can have, I look at it actually on a much broader scale beyond simply, you know, selling software, so to speak. But I actually believe that we can truly help, not just help in you know, building I would say systems and applications that the government really wants, but we can also help in the saving of money. You know, can we solve the budget crisis? Obviously, no. But I believe we can have a pretty big impact on some organizations and our ability to help them deal with this problem. I think that even on the broader scale and in a commercial ranks, the commercial world as well. But when we look at the amount of information, I think today, and I talked about it while we've been here, and just trying to wrap your mind around it, we really have to look to, obviously, policy decisions and so on aside, we really have to look to innovation to help with a lot of this. Mm-hmm. We really do. And I know, you know, a lot, we talk about it a lot, and sometimes I think I talk about it to folks and they roll their eyes like, sure, yeah, we need to do it.
But here we go again.
But exactly. But it really has to happen. It just has to happen. And I think, you know, there are companies and including companies like MarkLogic that can really help with this if given an opportunity to do it.
It's been a pleasure to have you here. Thank you very much for your time.
This has been a lot of fun.